What she says is it creates an aperture through which we can really begin to really see things. Then another flip part of that is I think one of the things that is important in terms of little things that can change the world, one of them that would be on the list is the willingness to be wrong. And to be able to not know, to not feel that you have to know everything, is a place where you can say, oh, well, maybe there's another way to look at that. Maybe there's something else to learn. Maybe the world's bigger than I thought it was. Maybe there's a perfect conversation somewhere. Maybe there isn't. So it's in that place that things sort of explode.
Hey everyone, I got a treat for you today. My guest author, her name is Bea, and Bea is a sweet person. Very happy and blessed today to have some time with Bea. Bea is going to share some stuff with us about her author journey, which is awesome. We're going to talk Library of Congress, which I've not had any author come on and discuss this a little bit. And she's got some advice for new authors, so stick around for that. And we're going to get our Moxie on with Bea. So Bea, welcome to the podcast. Nice to have you here.
It's a real delight to be here. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
And we had a little chat behind the scenes for people listening and watching on YouTube. We had a little chat earlier, and I love meeting authors in advance. We get a chance to talk, get a chance to connect with each other. I've got a page full of notes for you, Bea, so we're going to try to do our best to cover what we were chatting about and some great things that you're up to. So I don't want to keep anybody waiting. Bea, first of all, for the people listening and watching, where are you in this fine world of ours?
A year ago, moved to Portland, Oregon. And I moved here from Cincinnati. And I moved to the West Coast because part of my vision is how we work together, the little things we can do together to make a better world. And that was a conversation I could have more easily in bars and on the street, like with coffee vendors, than much as my friends in Cincinnati love me, was not a norm there.
Okay. So that's a big move. Energy. That's a big move, right? So that the energy drew you there?
I tell people I'm naturally peripatetic, which means I like wandering around a lot. And I was not kept in Cincinnati, but things sort of made it right for me to stay in Cincinnati much longer than I've ever stayed anywhere. So there was also that.
Okay. What do you love so far about Portland that maybe was a little bit of a surprise to you when you got there and got settled?
Well, I said I wanted to be by water, and I actually ended up as a housemate of someone who is, her back deck is right on the Columbia River, and I look across this gorgeous, gorgeous stretch of water over into Vancouver, Washington, and up the stream on a clear day to see Mount Hood, and it is just stunning. If ever I wonder why I'm here, I just look out the window.
I would be out on that deck, I think, every day, just sitting there watching the world go by.
It's a little cold, I think. Not as cold probably as it is for you, but...
Yeah. I love it. Okay, I'm always inspired to know where people end up in life, where they live, and why they live there. You could live anywhere, but the fact that you've chosen to be there, tell me about what draws you energy-wise.
Let me just add one other thing, because it's related to this idea that there's things we do together to change the world. And a few years ago, I chose not to have a car. I mean, nobody made me. I was waiting for my kids to do it, but they never would. So, you know. Hmm. And the public transportation system in Portland talks to each other. I mean, it's really pretty seamless to go from, like, streetcar to the train to the bus. It is all one ticket. And they automatically, it's the most matter-of-fact system in terms of ticketing and availability of anywhere I've ever been. And so that's really very, very fun.
Yeah, also it's almost like they planned it for the end user in mind, isn't that kind of the idea?
Well, it's come out that way. Yeah.
And that's a good lesson for authors, actually, if we just want to jump to that for a second. is we need to write in a way that the end user goes, hey, I can go from the train to the bus to the whatever, and everything just seamlessly fits together. As an author, if we write in a way that makes it easy for our readers to follow the path, I think, isn't that kind of a little
I think that's certainly true of a good novel. I mean, you know, you just get drawn in, and I'm a reader in this case. I'm Spocky as a reader and not an author.
Okay.
But you get drawn into that piece. As someone that does nonfiction, mainly, and poetry, you seek that because you want the ideas to draw, but the only thing you have to work with is your words. And it's an interesting challenge. It's one I thank you for naming that, because that's something I really do work on every day, is sort of making it seamless for people to be drawn into the ideas and the challenges and the possibilities.
And to use the transportation metaphor a little bit more, is no one's going to step on a bus, B, or a train with no indication up on top of where this vehicle is headed. There's always a location on the front, which kind of gives you a sense of where we're going. And then we're writing, as authors, we want to have a destination that we want to bring our audience to.
Just to be impish, people do get on the wrong trains.
Yes.
And they do get on the wrong buses, and they do pick up the wrong book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I bet a lot of you who are listening have picked up something and says, oh, I love that title, or this is my favorite author. And you go and you read like 10 pages, and then you flip to the back and you go like, huh? No, this isn't me now. And maybe it's the right destination 5 years later. You stumble that book again. You said, oh, is that what they were saying? Or else it's just like, yeah, that's not me. Mm. Might be my friends, but it's not me.
The things that we're reading, the things that we're pulling in. Yeah, we're pulling these information in at a moment in time, and we might be different 5 years from now, and the story might hit differently, right?
Well, I hope so.
I hope so.
I hope you're different 5 years from now.
So we're all growing, we're all getting better.
I mean, some people aren't. I think that's a choice. It's sort of like, there's some people who really are on sort of that path to know that they can be the best person they can be. And other people, that's just a really alien conversation. It's sort of like they feel like they're default. They're just defaulted to being whoever they are, and they go the path that they're given. And I always feel a little helpless, because all I can do is watch. And I try to explain what I do, and there's no clue. Or they're just polite about it. Anyway, that's the way it is.
So take me, B, through your... Yeah, take me through your author journey, B, a little bit about how you got on this path.
Right. I've done a lot of things. I mean, I've worked for major nonprofits, I mean, like national ones, and I've... And for profits a little bit, 20-30 years. And I wanted to do something that was me, that was who I was. And I figured that the only skill I really had that I knew I could do, I mean, was write. So at some point I started a list of all these things we could do. If only everybody did them, the world would be a better place. Like smile. That's an example everybody knows. You know how smile can be contagious. And there's, you know, I came up with like 100. And I was going to do this. I wanted to do this little, like one of those fancy books you buy, like in the Hallmark store, and, you know, costs you $20 and you give it to somebody to put in their bathroom. I wanted to do one of those, you know, with these little lines to do it. But I said the witty and clever. And as I said, the witty and clever escaped me. There was no way I could do it that way. But what came out of that, with some help of someone else, we created something we named Spirit Moxie, which is a whole other story, and you can read about it somewhere. But it has ended up being what I call conversations. or essays, or some people would call it blogs, but it's not really like, you know, I went to the grocery store and had this encounter kind of thing. So I don't like that word. But conversations that are supposed to be something like we're having, Dave, you know, that we can just sort of talk about an idea and go with it. And that became something, and the tagline for Spirit Moxie was Little Things That Can Change the World. And that began my writer's journey. And I'd do this and I'd talk to people like you all about what I was doing, and they'd go, huh? And so meanwhile, you know, I was starting some books because I knew you needed to write books and all that, and I was still getting, huh? What do you, I get it, but I don't get it. I mean, some people got it right away, but other people were like, really? So I thought, well, you're supposed to get a book, so I'll do a cut and paste of these things I've already written, and I'll put out an ebook, and I can save an ebook, and it'll explain it. But one thing I learned, and this is something that you all can learn, those of you that are thinking about writing, or that those of you that just love reading, to think about with your authors, books take on a life of their own. If you're being really honest with a book, it just goes where it wants to go. And I would say that I came up with a list of 10 things, because that sounded like a really good number. And I'd say 2/3 of them weren't written, and the other 1/3 didn't fit. And I finally got them together and said to somebody who has edited my things, I think she's just like, I'm not going to do any serious editing on this. It has to be a book. So they had to be linked together. And then I had a friend, or I still have a friend actually, who's an artist, and she'd been doing these little prompts with images for something she was trying. I said, hey, Cynthia, can you do this with these words? Well, she didn't. She instead took the words and did her whole intrinsic, she even started with her left hand, for those of you that are left hand, right hand things, to get into the images of them. And so they actually were a whole other reflection on what I'd already reflected on. So then I had, and I could have two choices. I could say, that doesn't work. And I'm not good at that. So instead it was, how do I integrate that into the book? So this book that was this quick and paste took about, I'd say 3 years. I'd have to think. But, and it ended up having to be completely rewritten several times. So it became one book instead of this pasted together things from something I'd already written. So that was the beginning of my author's journey. I used to work for a publisher. So, I know about publishing. So I had no trouble having Spirit Moxie publish this. And so I actually, for those of you that are authors and are thinking of that, put some money aside and pay for like real editing, pay for a cover, pay for, bribe your friends with food and drink. I did that. I paid for somebody to lay out. I've always ended up paying somebody. I used to be able to, but they've changed the software and I don't know anything anymore. So anyway. Is that sort of what you wanted? That's how it got me going on that.
Yeah.
I have a book, and therefore I can be on podcast person.
So, B, who inspires you as an author? Who's your go-to? If you have a free day and you're going to sit down and enjoy a good book, what do you like to read?
Well, if we don't count the mystery stories, I just got back to a Dorothy Sayers I had read a long time ago, and I was in the library and thought, like, I don't remember that one. I mean, I read it, but anyway. But in this sort of genre I do, my go-to person is mainly Martha Beck. If you don't know her, look her up. She's done some brilliant work, mainly sort of around being yourself. To be honest, I actually found her first through sort of a diet book called The 4-Day Win. But her last, well, that isn't her last, her second to last huge book, which was, finding, It's one of those really long names. Sorry, my mind just went.
Hold on. You got it right there.
I've got it right here. Finding your way in a wild new world. It's a Martha Cook book. So she's sort of my go-to. I've had the privilege of meeting her twice. COVID.
Nice.
Throughout the third meeting.
Nice, because that gives you a sense of who you're feeding yourself with, which would then in turn come through in maybe some of your approach to your writing or your style. Does it feed you at all?
I do something, I get quotes from her and things. For example, I do something online twice a month called Corner of Calm, which is just a half an hour of listening to me for 5 minutes, and then we sit together for 20 minutes just in silence with some music playing that isn't silence, just without talking. It's in training to calm, because I was calm during COVID, which is a long way of saying that in the little 5 minutes I do at the beginning, the next one I'm going to do, I'm using one of her quotations that I got from the thing that, I want to talk about that. And it is the idea of bringing unknowing and the power of not knowing into things that really opens things up rather than thinking that you have to know. That's an example of her using me this week.
So why is that important? I want to get a sneak peek. Why is that important?
Calm or not knowing?
Not knowing.
What she says is it creates an aperture through which we can really begin to really see things. Then another flip part of that is I think one of the things that is important in terms of little things that can change the world, one of them that would be on the list is the willingness to be wrong. And to be able to not know, to not feel that you have to know everything, is a place where you can say, maybe there's another way to look at that. Maybe there's something else to learn. Maybe the world's bigger than I thought it was. Maybe there's a perfect conversation somewhere. Maybe there isn't. So it's in that place that things sort of explode. It's where a new idea happens. It's where all of a sudden something that made no sense, all of a sudden you go around and you go like, that can work. I think you do that with podcast ideas. Is that coming out in English? I always am nervous.
Yeah.
Good. But that's
you're resonating with me. I really love it. Yeah, I like your thoughtful way of the way you work through your answer and the way that you want to present your thoughts in a way that have meaning. I can tell that you do that.
And sometimes people don't get what I say, which so I always have to check in. But thank you for that.
That's great. Okay, so how many books do you have, Bea?
Right now I have two. Scribbles and things with others. I have the one that I'm proud of, the one I was talking about, that was my cobbled together thing that turned into a real book. I was actually going out of the country and I was telling my housemates, saying if I die, and make sure this happens. I'll make sure this happens. Anyway, so it's this one. It's called Moxie Moves, 10 Easy Ways to Make a Powerful Difference. It's a you can see the artist got credit. You can see this cover. I paid to get this cover. You can see that my name has changed since then. So it's real, it's really that. But I talk about that in the book. So this is a transition book in a lot of ways on how people know me.
Yeah.
And, there's random art that doesn't necessarily make any sense unless you really play with it.
So tell me, B, what are you so proud of for that book? What makes you smile when you pick it up?
Well, I've dealt with it long enough that I do know some mistakes in it, but not really. It was so thoroughly sat with and worked through. I mean, it really does what I asked it to do. It's not necessarily profound, But it really is 10 things that if you did them all the time, you would make a powerful difference and you would change.
So in addition to smiling, can you give us another one of the 10? Just a sample.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Be grateful. I think, is that what it says? That's the one that I always... And what was really interesting about it... another one, for example, they were all positive words. And this is an example of not writing something in isolation. I mean, I had people I was talking to and writing to and buying drinks for. You might as well pay people the way you want to be paid. But anyway, and one of the things was don't litter. And don't litter is a negative phrase. So two things happened with that. One, I was on my one and only TV show, which I was on, talking about Spirit Moxie, and with two other friends, and we were all driving back, and we got talking about the whole litter piece, and they started talking about the way we litter each other's minds, like with expectations or false premises or negative images. And I'd never thought about that. I mean, I'd never thought about it in those terms. So all of a sudden, talk about having to rewrite something, that whole idea demanded to be written into the physical litter thing that was the original. And also, it was still don't litter, which is negative. And I don't know how I finally got there, but it took forever. And when I tell you what it came up, you'd say, how did it take so long? But the chapter now says, be litter free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's now a positive thing. And that's teamwork all the way around. Listening to your friends, listening to ideas, being willing to change something you're writing. There you go. But that's three of them.
There right we go. There. That's enough. People need to go buy the book. So I want to just give them a taste. And that's good. I love it. And now you've also written Talking to Trees. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
I did Talking to Trees. Okay. It's a poetry book. And it was a COVID, well, it started before, but it asked to be written. It had an old life of its own. I'd say that it's the whole of it that works more than any of the individual pieces in it. Because it's pictures and mainly iPhone photographs taken by me or somebody else. Mainly me, but all the poetry is mine. And the one, and another friend decided it was going to be a fast ebook. Just do a Kindle on Amazon, wouldn't cost me anything. And I had a friend who really insisted on formatting it so we could also sell it as a real book. And the thing about this book is it's stunning. So whatever the content is, it's just beautiful to look at. You can see some of the things inside. I mean,
wow,
it's just beautiful. I told you earlier, we'll go to your Library of Congress piece. So heads up, if you're ever doing self-publishing, you learn about getting your own ISBN numbers and the broker thing and all that stuff. But one of the things I always noticed on books is they have this whole Library of Congress thing, which is a whole cataloging basis. And I was reading, and finally I learned, and I can't remember the complete process, that it's really easy to get a Library of Congress number as an individual author. If you're a publisher, they'll do something else. But if you're just like you and me, you can do this. I'm sure if you Google it, you can find it. But, and what they'll do is they'll just give you a control number, which is just a line on the book right across. But it's a real number. It won't work for an ebook. It's for a physical copy book. And, I know this will break your heart, but then you have to send them a copy after it's published. So your book has to be in the Library of Congress. I know that's difficult, but. I figured, in a pinch, it would be okay with me.
That's a good donation of a book, I think. That's a good way to donate.
It's a good donation of a book. And I'm almost wishing to do a second edition of Moxie Moves so I could do it for it, too.
That's a great tip for authors. Yeah, I really like that. I don't think I've had anybody mention that before. So very unique offering. Thank you for bringing that forward. I think it's definitely authors need to consider that, especially if you have a printed copy of your book. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And especially if you're doing the self-publishing route, which is so common right now. And worthwhile. I mean, you know, there's famous books that have been self-published.
So, Bea, from your perspective, for all the years in publishing and for your own author journey, any words of wisdom to a new author, Bea, that's listening to us going, I have an idea, I'm starting to write. Can you give them a little bit of some guardrails? You know, you can still kind of do your thing, but here's kind of my best suggestion as a new author. What would you say?
Well, I'd say don't be afraid to share what you write. And as somebody had to remind me, write, you know, that talking about writing isn't the same thing. One of my mystery story author heroes, I always, and this might be a good, if I reference somebody, I always tell them. I wrote this book and I talk about you in the beginning. Well, I didn't do that with the truth book, so I lied. But anyway, and I wrote to this author because I talked about reading her book while I was doing something else, and she wrote back to me and said, real authors write. Because I was doing a procrastination story where I was reading her book instead of putting words on paper. But it does, and the other thing is it doesn't have to be long. You know, 5 minutes on a piece of paper, or it can be 15 minutes is sort of the magic time, but just write. Don't be afraid to share and before you actually share it with the world, get somebody else to edit it.
Yeah, I have one author came on, B, and they said that they write and then they do edits. They don't edit while they write because then they get caught in the mixture of editing and writing and they stop the flow of writing. So any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't work that way just because my mind doesn't work that way. Some people work more in a straight line than I do. So every time I reread something, I change something when I'm, you know, seeing where I'm going next. But what I'm talking about editing in this case is get some other person to do it. I mean, I have somebody that does everything I publish online, does it before I do it, and she doesn't look at the world the way I do, so it changes it. And that's not the end of the world, usually. For Spirit Moxie, I ended up the final edit. I had two people. One, somebody who had actually made a living proofreading. And the other one was, my regular editor did the very, very beginning. But the bulk of it was done by someone who had just really enjoyed editing when she was in school. That was her, you know, she loved English, she loved editing, and she really wanted a shot at doing it, and I let her. And paid her a little bit.
So that outside perspective really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Like it. It's that whole thing about being, you can't see the trees for the forest, right? You're in the story, you're in the writing, and you might miss something that someone else from an outside perspective can see and speak into.
And you also come to writing, people come to writing from very different backgrounds. So what you might think sounds very straightforward and clear, someone else might go, huh?
Yeah.
Or, I never saw it spelled that way, or whatever it is.
Love it. So what's coming up for you, Bea?
Just a little bit. And the other thing, once you publish something and get it out, this is hard. Remember, it doesn't belong to you anymore.
Mm.
There's something that completes something by someone else. If you're an artist of any kind, music, art, words, cooking, by having somebody else interact with it. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's great. Sorry. I love it.
I'm not sorry. No. I'm not sorry, but it seemed important to say.
I like it. What's coming up for you, Bea, in your author journey? Where are we going from here?
Well, I have part of now living in Portland, I found a place to read poetry. And actually, I read the last chapter of Moxie Moves there too. And that's been feeling really supportive. So that's been encouraging. I have the book that I was working on before I even began Moxie Moves. I'm still sitting there. And another poetry book. It's just called an adult alphabet book. But a lot of it also is just my ongoing writing for online and sharing with my tribe. If they're my tribe, I don't say my tribe. They're friends, people.
That's great.
Anyway, I find that hard to like name because I'm always surprised by what happens.
But you continue to share and you continue to give. And that's the key right there.
Like right now, I'm writing something about the body and how, for me, I find it supportive and other people find it disruptive. That's good. I like that. I needed those words.
B, when you're writing, do you ever have a moment where you're kind of watching yourself write and going, wow, this is, where is this coming from? Like, where is this well that I'm drawing from?
I don't know if I do as well, but I mean, the other day, I write better not at home as a whole, although with COVID and Zoom and computers, and I'm part of a writing group that writes ideally three times a week on Zoom. I do it more at home. But anyway, the other night I took my journal to a restaurant that I go to that is closing, and I don't usually do poetry in my journal. And damn it, if there isn't a poem in there. I mean, it's so. So I guess sometimes that happens. Like, this is interesting.
Talk a little bit about your writing group. I'm curious. How did you find it, and what does it do for you?
It was a friend of the people I was living with during COVID. Had it, and it's a handful of people that know. They mainly write speculative fiction. Some of them are well known in certain circles. And, they're all over the world. Well, one's in England and one's in Canada. That makes it all over the world. And we've become just really good friends as a whole. So there's sort of this sense of what the other people are doing and support for that.
Nice.
It's 2 hours. We write in 21-minute intervals because the scientist in the group read that that was about as long as you can have attention. And check in on what we're writing. And
nice. It's a little community.
Until we're done with it, and that's it. I don't know how to explain why it's, but if nothing else, it gives me a time. Sometimes I even do other stuff, but there's something about that. Focused
and the community side as well, right?
Yeah, I find very, very useful.
Yeah, I love that.
And fun, friends. It's a real community. Yeah. So a lot of them have actually met each other.
Great. I love it.
I've only met one of them.
I really want to thank you for being part of the podcast. It's great to have you here. The one thing we talked about too is that you have stuff out there in the world. I know we talked about YouTube. Can you share a little bit about that? And as well, where people can connect with you, like where you're most active, in case somebody has a question and they want to reach out.
Well, I'm probably most active on Facebook. I'm on everything. And you can find me on everything, either as B. Sedgwick or as Spirit Moxie.
Okay.
There's a Facebook page on that. That's what I am on Instagram. That's what I am on YouTube. There's a channel called Spirit Moxie. And mainly, this will be there, I'm told. And, I've been getting better about recording those little 5-minute snippets at the beginning, 5-10 minutes at the beginning of Corner of Calm. So those have been pretty consistently posted on that as a channel. There's a couple other long thing on being in presence that I do with this lovely Japanese woman from Idaho. There's a, I mean, so there are other things on there. There's a playlist. If you think everything needs a playlist, there's a Spirit Moxie playlist on there. And some unexpected things. So that's, yeah, just reach out to me. And if you really want it, it's at b@spiritmoxie.com. You can send me an email. Mm-hmm. Just to let it be.
So B, I would be remiss to not ask this question. You're a very thoughtful person, and I love how you approach the interview and our conversation today. I want to know, I'm curious, what is your message to the world, B? Because you have something to share.
Well, it changes. But right now, what I really want you to know, all of you out there, is that you matter and you make a difference. And for a lot of you, that's in your head, that's going round and round and round about, no, not me. Maybe after I do this. No, right this second, you matter, you make a difference.
I love it, Bea. Thank you for making time for me today.
Oh, my pleasure. I love talking to you.
And I love the fact that I get to speak to amazing authors from around the world. And now I've got to add Portland, Oregon to my list of must-go places. So you got me.
Maybe I'll come out to Niagara Falls.
There you go. We can see the falls together. That'd be great. Thank you, Bea, for your time today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Everyone, please go check out the show notes. We have links to everything that Bea has mentioned. And go and support Bea by purchasing the books and following along on the journey. There's a lot here to soak in. And again, I think you get the sense listening to Bea on the podcast that you're going to get a thoughtful, caring response if you reach out to Bea. So, Bea, thank you for being here. Jumping here at the very end, I want to thank you for coming. We have listeners around the world, and I got to tell you, as a podcaster, it is so great to hear back from the people who listen to the show. Now, you are still here. The podcast's over. Like, we're sweeping up and putting the chairs away. You're still here. So, hi. I would love to talk to you. No, I really, really would. I would love to hear your voice. I would love to hear from you through email. You can do all that at livingthenextchapter.com. I say it fast because I love it. Living the Next Chapter, it's the name of the podcast, .com. How's that for easy? Right? Right. So come on over there and let's have a conversation. You can set up time in my calendar. You can air quote here, book time in my calendar, book next chapter. Let's have a conversation. Thanks for being here. See you on the next one. Cheers.
Hey there, fellow parent. If you're anything like me, balancing screen time for our kids is a constant struggle. That's why I want to share a little secret with you, KidsPod. It's this amazing app I found that's packed with podcasts just for kids. Imagine stories, learning, and fun, all without the screen. It's been a game changer in our house, keeping my kids engaged and their imaginations running wild. And guess what? It's completely free. So download KidsPod today. Trust me, it's a decision you won't regret.